Welcome to Conflict and Cortisol, episode 23 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Awigon. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Mike Kennedy to talk about the effects that conflict and all the stress that goes with conflict have on your body. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by the ancient Greek storyteller Aesop. A crust eaten in peace is better than a banquet partaken in anxiety. Dr. Mike Kennedy is a board-certified general practice physician with expertise in integrative and alternative medicine, as well as health, fitness, and wellness. Mike, thank you so much for being with us today.
I truly am happy to be here, and I appreciate the invitation. Thank you very much.
Of course, we all know that conflict is stressful and that long-term conflict and stress takes its toll on us on many levels. What exactly happens in our body when we're having those kinds of experiences?
Our brain and our body are both hardwired to react to stress. From ancient times, even prehistoric times, we have mechanisms within us to react instantly to stress. So when a stressor is upon us, let's say in prehistoric days, a saber-toothed tiger leaping out in front of us, and in modern days, a car swerving towards us while we're on the freeway, mechanisms happen very quickly within our brain to deal with that. A part of the brain called the hypothalamus signals the adrenal glands, which are triangular organs on top of the kidneys, to secrete a variety of hormones. But the ones we will concentrate on are called corticosteroids. And the primary one, which is of concern, is called cortisol. When we are faced with a stressor, our body secretes cortisol and adrenaline from that signal coming from the hypothalamus. Then we're ready to react to whatever stressor that might be. And what does that mean? Well, the adrenaline increases our blood pressure and increases our heart rate. The cortisol constricts our blood vessels in certain areas and dilates them in other areas, primarily the large muscles and the brain, in order to quickly react to whatever stressor that might be. And as a result, our body is ready to react with the blood in the body and then also a surge of glucose, sugar, which helps us have energy to flee or to react to whatever stressor we're being faced with, as well as turning off certain parts of the body, such as the immune system. It attenuates or turns down the immune system, which is not important in a fight, flight, or fright situation when we're fleeing from someone, when we're confronted with a stressor. In addition to that, the reproductive organs and the digestive organs are also shunted away from. What that means is that they have become a very low priority in this situation, so there's not a lot of blood going to them. And this is a great mechanism in short term, but it has consequences when it happens over and over and over again, which we're not really designed to deal with. And it definitely has long-term health consequences. And a lot of Americans in general are suffering from cortisol excess and the manifestations thereof.
That's really a complex set of physical reactions that happens. And I can only imagine what that cascade must be like for the body long-term. So what exactly is cortisol and what other functions does it serve in our body other than that reaction to stress?
Cortisol is in a group of hormones called glucocorticoids, and it is produced, as I said, in the adrenal gland, particularly the cortex of the adrenal gland. The adrenal gland has two parts, the medulla and the cortex. The medulla produces some hormones, such as adrenaline. The cortex produces other hormones such as cortisol and many others, but we don't need to deal with that at this point. They are called steroid hormones, and they're not the kind of steroids that are abused by some professional athletes or bodybuilders. They don't pump you up. What they do is prepare you for stressful situations. And as I said before, it favors the fight, flight, or fright mode. But cortisol and adrenaline are meant to be short-term hormones. They're meant to be actions by our body that eventually will go away and we get back to baseline, what's called homeostasis. And in modern life, unfortunately, When we're faced with stressors of life and relationships and jobs and the freeway and bills and politics and all the different things that we have to deal with, we have the unfortunate situation where we're always stressed out. We're always in that fight, flight, or fright mode, but it doesn't come down. And then that cortisol, which is meant to be short-term, starts having long-term effects, which can be very deleterious and in the end can be quite deadly for many people. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. And so in what ways do the long-term effects affect our body? What are those long-term effects?
The long-term effects of cortisol excess, it has a host of different effects. One of the most important ones is immune suppression. When cortisol is secreted, what it does is reduce inflammation, because that's a good thing to do in a fight, flight, or fright situation. But if you reduce inflammation in long term and suppress the immune system, and that's how it reduces inflammation, it suppresses the immune system, then the immune system cannot do what it's designed to do, which is defend us from all the different things that we are bombarded with every day. Toxins and viruses and bacteria and even cancer development and inflammation in the arteries, things like that, which lead to atherosclerosis. All these things can be completely out of control with cortisol excess. Another thing that happens is the mood and the ability to think clearly can be altered with cortisol excess, because the brain is in a stimulated mode. And if we're stimulated all the time, we can't calmly assess situations. So cortisol excess can definitely do that. Another thing it does is it suppresses sexual function and fertility. It also, in excess, can cause, because of elevated blood pressure, constricted blood vessels, and increased inflammation, what we see in the end is a lot of association of excess cortisol with cancer, heart disease, and various other, especially gastrointestinal problems. Because as you recall from what I said previously, cortisol shuts down our gastrointestinal system.
What I'm finding so ironic is that when we're in the midst of conflict and stress and feeling that need to defend ourselves from all of the aggression of other people or the stressors of life, that at that same time, because of the effect of excess cortisol, we are losing our immune defense. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. It's been proven over and over again in multiple studies that people who are excessively stressed and as a result have high cortisol. Another effect, of course, of cortisol excess, which I should have mentioned, is obesity. One of the things that cortisol does, and this is one of the reasons why America is obese, not just because of inactivity and digital distraction and excess imbibement of sugary drinks and fake food, which has no nutrition and high calories, but cortisol itself encourages the body to store fat. So when we're chronically stressed, now you think, hey, I'm stressed out, I should be losing weight. But you don't lose weight, you gain weight when you're chronically stressed out. So cortisol definitely has that effect to increase weight gain, decrease the immune system, decrease the ability to think clearly, and a variety of maladies with the digestive system.
That's such an important body of information for us. I know that when we're in the midst of conflict and stress, we're very often not thinking about our body, and most people don't have this kind of information unless they have the kind of educational and skill background that you have. And so all this is happening in our bodies and we're not even aware of it. So then what can we do to avoid excess cortisol secretion and its long-term deleterious effects?
Well, that's an excellent question. And this is really the take home of what we're talking about. You know, people need to learn that control of most situations is completely out of our hands. That control is an illusion. And the only thing we can control is ourself and our reaction to situations. We can't control situations. We can't control, the analogy I used previously, a truck veering towards us. We can't control that, but we can control how we react to that. Khalil Gibran said, our anxiety does not come from thinking about the future, but from wanting to control it. Control is an illusion. So that's the first thing, mindset. The second thing is regular stress management activities. And for me, that is a trifecta. One is regular exercise. We need to aerobically exercise at least 120 minutes a week for effective cardiovascular conditioning and decreasing cortisol secretion, finding that calm. That's only 30 minutes four times a week, and that's aerobic exercise. So on top of that, you want to add other components of your exercise program, stretching and balance and strength training and so forth. But the aerobic exercise is really what helps decrease those cortisol events. Another thing, of course, is meditation and mindfulness. These are activities that can help you start to assess, how did I react to that? And how can I react differently next time in order to be more calm? And if you're calm, you don't have cortisol. Of course, diet has a lot to do with how we feel. So eating an anti-inflammatory, good variety of foods with heavy emphasis on fruits and vegetables, very little white sugar, white flour, and processed foods, that absolutely has an effect on cortisol secretion and on health in general. And sex helps a lot to decrease our stress levels and our cortisol levels. There's been very solid studies on that. Having a dog, having a pet, a cat or a dog, or even a goldfish, increases your oxytocin and your serotonin levels, which are the neurotransmitters in our brain, which help us feel good. They're the pleasure hormones. Simultaneously, they decrease cortisol. All of those things in combination can help us deal with this. But the primary thing that people need to do in order to decrease cortisol is remember that they're not in control of most situations. The only control that they have is over their reaction to that situation.
I love what you said about control is an illusion. That's a quote that should be on bumper stickers, should be on billboards. I think it's an important thing to learn, because especially in American society, there's a lot of programming about being in control. And one of the things that we talk about in conflict resolution is that we can't control the other person. We can't control their behavior. The only thing that we can do, as you're saying, is control ourselves and control how we choose to contribute to the conflict, or how we choose to contribute to the de-escalation and resolution of the conflict. And so that makes complete sense. I was going to ask you, what would happen if a person de-escalated themselves, if they had a way to de-escalate themselves when they were highly upset? And you just shared not only what happens, you also shared some really great tools, the mindfulness and the meditation and the exercise, the yoga, good nutrition. All of those things not only help our body, they also help us calm ourselves and get that clarity that we need, not only to reduce our cortisol levels, but also to reduce our conflict and be able to see, how do we move forward from this highly stressful situation into one where we are feeling peaceful and calm, so that we can then collaborate with others and co-create peace. So that's very helpful information. What else would you like our listeners to know about conflict and its effect on the body or cortisol?
When we're confronted with a conflict or a stressful situation, as I mentioned, and it's certainly easier said than done, our interpretation of that and our reaction to that make a huge difference in terms of what our physiologic response to that situation is going to be. And the best way to deal with a conflict is take a breath before you react. Whether it's something that your significant other says that kind of tans your hide, or a colleague at work says something that's offensive to you, take a deep breath and then react. The breath is the key to relaxation. The breath is the key to taking our body from the sympathetic nervous system, the fight, flight, or fright nervous system, to the parasympathetic nervous system, where we get calm and we can assess the situation in a calm, resolved manner, rather than in a stressed out manner where you're going to possibly do or say something that you can regret. And once you do that, you can't take it back. Lady Macbeth said, "What's done cannot be undone." And what she was talking about was murder. But in this case, it's the same with words and actions. And if we think about what we do, take a deep breath before we react to stressful situations, it can make a huge difference. It can also, at the same time, decrease your cortisol levels.
That ties in so well to some of the things that I've talked about in previous podcasts, where I talk about stopping, stepping back, looking at the situation from the neutral observer perspective, breathing deep and really contemplating before responding to something. And now I understand more about how that actually affects us physiologically as well. And that makes all the difference in the world. I see so many conflicts exacerbating because people feel that they need to immediately react to whatever was said or done. And when they do that, they're very rarely in their highest wisdom. It takes that pause that you're talking about and that deep breathing so that we can clear away that emotional response and, as you're pointing out, that physiological response so that then we can, as I say, see, think, speak, and act from our highest and wisest self, or at least higher and wiser than we would have if we were just immediately reacting to what just happened in front of us. That's such great wisdom for people to be able to look at and absorb and implement. Thank you so much for that.
Well, not only is our body reacting to a situation like that in conflict, but our mind is in concert with our body. And there are different parts of the brain that react differently. When we react instantly and with anger and without thought, we're using a part of our mind called the archicortex, which is kind of our lizard mind. The ancient mind, which is, you just confronted me and I'm going to kick your butt. That doesn't work in modern society. So we have to, with the deep breath, decreasing our cortisol levels and changing the way our brain reacts to it, we go up to our upper brain, up into our cerebral cortex, where reasoning and objective thought take place. And then you can say to yourself, well, this is how I'm going to react, rather than just reacting. So it's not just physiologic, it's also neurophysiologic. Conflict has a host of results when the unprepared person is reacting to it. But if you're prepared for it and you've practiced for it through meditation and mindfulness and breathing and thinking about how you reacted the last time and doing a better job this time, we're only human. We all make mistakes. We all say things and do things that are stupid. And often we regret it if we have any kind of ability of introspection. But the person who is finding their way through self-realization can say to themselves, I don't like the way I reacted to that. How can I react better next time? And that kind of mindfulness and attempt at finding emotional equanimity is really ideal, but it's achievable.
That's so interesting. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about the tie-in between how the brain responds, how the body responds, the emotional responses, and all of that, and how that all ties in. Yet, with all of that cascading happening that could influence our actions in a negative way, if we have that moment to be mindful, to be introspective, we can actually consciously create the next moment, rather than react in such a way that the other person reacts back and everything is out of control. But the idea that we could actually consciously, mindfully create what's going to happen next, rather than just diving in head first, makes all the difference. And it seems to me that if one can be mindful in this way, that even though we all have moments of upset and we often have conflict just because conflict happens, we can still respond to it in a mindful and constructive way and actually have something positive come out of that moment, not just in our relationship with that other person, but also in what happens in our body.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Conflict is something that is inevitable and appears to be increasingly unavoidable in our society. But as we reiterated and should be the premise of this podcast, conflict and cortisol are definitely interrelated. But if you interpret conflict in a different way and remember that you have no control over the outcome, only your reaction to that conflict, then you actually are controlling the outcome. In a way, because the outcome is very much related to how you react to that conflict. So part of de-escalation of yourself and the situation is the deep breath, reflection on perhaps the way you dealt with conflict previously, and making an attempt to decrease our stress levels in general, because we know, as I've said, that chronic stress has huge effects on the body. Obesity, inflammation, heart disease, infertility, impotence, lack of joie de vivre, people lose their ability to love life, We are not wired for chronic stress. We are wired for acute stress, where we react to something, but we're not wired to have those cortisol levels elevated all the time. So take a deep breath, reflect, and think of what is important in life, the simple things. Remember that that's what we need to embrace. Epicurus, he said, we need to find a way to find no worry in our life. And he thought that there's three things we can do to do that. One, live a simple life. Make sure that things don't get too complex. Two, surround yourself by friends and family and avoid negative people. And the third, and this was true then as much as it is now, avoid politics.
Oh, how prophetic that is.
Yes, yes, he's the father of the Epicurean philosophy, a philosophy to which I subscribe.
And, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm also thinking that one of the things that I've recognized and also read about in psychology is that human beings have the tendency to unconsciously mirror or mimic one another's behavior. And that's part of the reason I think why conflicts escalate the way they do. Somebody says something in an angry or insulting tone to us, and we immediately react without pausing and thinking and stepping into our higher self. We immediately react in the same way or a worse way. And yet if somebody can be conscious and mindful, they can actually set the tone. And it's very likely that the other person is going to unconsciously or consciously model or mimic back what we do. And so thinking about what you're talking about with that deep breath and that calm approach, that could very well inspire the other person to do the same thing, which may actually have a benefit to them, not only in terms of their emotional escalation, but in terms of their physiological responses as well. So there could actually be a benefit to the other person for doing the kinds of things that you're suggesting our listeners do as well.
I could not have said it better.
Well, thank you so much, Mike, for the time that you've taken with us and the thoughts that you've shared. It's been very rich, and there's so much that I've learned and that I know our listeners are learning. We really appreciate all that you've given us. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. I'd like to come back anytime.
Thank you. I'd love to have you back.
To learn more about Dr. Mike Kennedy and his work, contact him at voxdoc@outlook.com. That's voxdoc@outlook.com. Thank you to everyone who has sent me great topic ideas for this podcast and letters seeking advice. I'll be reading some of those letters on the air in upcoming episodes in July. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have about conscious communication or conflict transformation. All you have to do is email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON @bridgesofpeace.com. I will reply within 2 business days. I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. You will be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. Join me next week when I'll be talking with Lisanna Eriks, a fellow mediator in Perth, Australia, who will share some of her insights into conflict dynamics and suggestions for constructive ways to work through them. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.